I'd really like to introduce our keynote speaker, and I'm so pleased that we were able to get Christopher to kick off this summit today. And Beth, I want to thank you for contacting Chris, because when I spoke to him earlier, he said, you know, any recommendation from Beth is good for me. So Beth, we owe you one. So we really appreciate that. So it is my pleasure to introduce this year's keynote speaker, Christopher Wink. Christopher is a journalist and an entrepreneur who is the co-founder and CEO of Technically, the news organization with a community of technologists and entrepreneurs. He specializes in local economic development, including entrepreneurship and tech workforce trends, journalism strategy, and building trust online. Chris was previously publisher of Generosity.org, which reports on the nonprofit sector, and a former media director for the homeless advocacy nonprofit. He is the lead organizer of Philly Tech Week, co-founder of Baltimore Innovation Week, and is behind other events that bring together smart people. In 2022, Wink was named one of Pennsylvania's most influential impact leaders, and in 2017, Folio Magazine listed him as one of the 100 most innovative media leaders in the country. And we have him here with us today. So I'd like to welcome Christopher.
Lest anyone thinks I had a dramatic entrance, I was actually flipping the slide, so it was actually quite the opposite. So, thanks for the time. I want to tell you about why a 2015 dress from Lord & Taylor broke influencer marketing and then shaped what we call the creator economy today. In March 2015, Lord & Taylor is releasing the beautiful asymmetrical paisley dress. And to launch that, they do something we were seeing more at that point. They work with a couple fashion brands, including Nylon Magazine, and 50 influencers, people with large following on Instagram. And Lord & Taylor pays them $1,000 to $4,000 each to post. And they dutifully post this, looking fabulous, wearing the asymmetrical paisley dress. And somewhere, someone lodges a complaint with the FTC and says, I think this is actually advertising, and they're not disclosing it. FTC investigates, and that's what happens. A year later, the FTC gets the opportunity to do what they've been looking to do. They catch a brand doing something that breaks guidelines they had set back in 2013, where you're supposed to use what the FTC designed cleverly, hashtag ad, on any social post that you've been paid to post. Paid to post was the framing at this point. Little window into my household. My wife remembers the paisley dress. I remember the FTC complaint. So this was supposed to break influencer marketing, because now every influencer had to use hashtag ad, and the sense was this wouldn't work. Why in a place with so much organic marketing would anyone engage with something that was hashtag ad? But kind of the opposite happened. By 2018, Christian Dior launches the Saddlebag, a thing I definitely knew existed. And there's reporting that influencers were using hashtag ad even if they hadn't been paid, if they hadn't been given the bag. Because at that point, it was seen as a flex. This is prestige. If a brand was anointing you as someone to share something, it was dope. So suddenly, people were adding hashtag ad to their posts even if they hadn't. So it didn't break influencer marketing. It kind of just changed it in a weird way. And so that's where we could see the creator economy emerging. The reason that influencer marketing is under creator economy instead of the opposite is because if everyone wants to be an influencer, you have to stand out with some sort of creativity. We all know follower counts can be gamed, numbers and engagement are difficult to track, and so creativity became the vehicle. This is where we get the concept of the creator economy in its modern form, why it's the bigger umbrella group. And that's what I want to talk a bit about today, how you might employ it in your own fields, even if they might range, they might not be as fashionable as Dior. So quick context of why I listen to me. I'm a journalist. This was so nicely done for introduction. I found it technically for a tech news site. So it mostly means tech companies, emerging tech workforce. But it's always backed around the web economy. So we've always covered, hey, how the internet works in some form. And in an incredibly nerdy fashion, I kind of came out of the creator economy. I was in those blogger days when instead of fabulous influencers, we wore sweatpants and were on like WordPress. So it was a different generation of creators. But nonetheless, that's where we were. So you should subscribe to us,
love talking about this stuff, but this is the lens I'm bringing. It's reporting on an innovation economy and that sort of thing. Why does this matter? Typically, if you're at one of these conferences, someone's going to put up a slide with a bunch of nonsense numbers. Forrester tells you $75 trillion are going in. It's all bullshit. I did three interviews in the last week and a half with different market analysts have some PDF out right now to try to determine how many actual full-time creators there are. I spoke to someone from Adobe, whose site puts 500,000 full-time creators in there. Spoke to a former Annenberg market analyst who puts the number at 12 million full-time analysts, which would be four times as many software developers. So as I kindly said to him, I trust your methodology, I don't trust your outcomes. It's not true. So I think, forget this. I don't think it matters. So there's big numbers. This is Ed Keller's, who I just spoke to on Monday, most recently. 27 million, who cares, right? Like, that number makes a little sense to me. That'd be about 10% of people who post on social media have either gotten products or paid in some form. Sure. I can work with that. I don't think the full-time number is real. I challenge that greatly, but that's the journalism in me. The point is, I think, whether or not you think it's big, whether or not you engage creators is itself a signal of whatever brand you represent. Creator marketing has evolved, influencer marketing has aged enough that you can say this is not the right fit for my brand, or you can say it is. Either way, it's a choice. So, if you're thinking about whether you should fall asleep while listening to me or not, my point is, whether or not you engage creator marketing is gonna say something about your brand either way, so that's why you would buckle in and say, I'll listen to the strange man with a clicker. So, quick sense of how we got here, lots of ways you could start this. A lot of people look at the famed Tila Tequila as the beginning of creator marketing for two interesting points. So, she briefly is the most followed person on MySpace. And for those who have like aged through MySpace to Facebook to Twitter to TikTok, right. Look at what changed. In MySpace, you didn't only follow people you knew. You also followed celebrities, musical artists. It was very much a prediction of the interest graph we have today. Then Facebook and Twitter took a different direction. You were following people you knew, or at least thought to, right? Like, we joked if you met someone over Twitter. It was kind of funny, because the idea was that you should roughly be following people you knew. But MySpace was very much you were following people who had influence. It was very much the origin of influencer marketing. Where we get the beginning of paid posts, mommy bloggers deserve credit for that. Heather Armstrong and Melinda Roberts for all the very strange last few years deserve a lot of credit for introducing the idea of working with brands in their feed to say display advertising is not enough. I'll co-author stuff in feed and shape your narrative within my own. 2007, YouTube drops their partner program. Cannot be overstated how much that creates the creator economy. YouTube was relatively generous, paying people not just for views, but also time on video, which always early on incentivized. If you want to know why does YouTube have 50-minute videos of high quality and TikTok is just trying to get there, it's that. It's the partner program. If you got enough views for enough length on time, YouTube did pay you. So there was money there briefly. It's why Hank and John Green are YouTubers. Like, that's where it comes from, is a YouTube partner program. By 2011, we get that phrase, native advertising. The whole category is trying to understand what's going on with why brands are working with creators in some form, if we wouldn't have used that word. 2013, we had this big FTC hearing. Wall Street Journal, Brand Studio, a bunch of groups come together and say, what do we do about this? This is where hashtag ad comes from. And then by 2015, you have that Lord & Taylor deal. In 2019, when TikTok Hype House, they started when it was Musical.ly, but these creators come together and say they're going to stand up, they're going to rent a house in Beverly Hills, and they're going to create content for clients, which, if I'm being honest, sounds like a dystopian nightmare. But, in fact, kind of brought TikTok into very much the American heights. This is the real height of TikTok. And then when the pandemic comes, the wave continues. So this is roughly where we get to on how the creator economy, where they're... creators and influencers working with brands to try to shape how marketing works. And I think this shift from the social graph that we briefly got in the 2010s back to this interest graph, where on TikTok, you're on your FYP page, Facebook, and Instagram, the reason you go there and you don't only see people you know is because of this. This is where this comes from. It's why Instagram and Facebook have changed so much in the utility. You're not only seeing people you know. It's an algorithmic feed. That's where this is coming from. And that suddenly makes creators thrive, right? Because previously, if you only are really talking to those you know, platforms weren't quite as valuable for marketers because you don't only want to know friends. Which is why actually the mommy blog movement worked so well to develop sponsored posts, because they used parenting as a vehicle to bring a wide swath of people together. So it's kind of natural where we see people show up. YouTube gets partner program early because, again, they want to get to an audience that's well beyond who you're friends with. just like quick terminology check, because I'm going to use this a bunch, I want us to be on the same page. Probably a lot of you already have some sort of ambassador program. It could be, oh, we have employees who do employer brand marketing for us. You know, it could be taking fan content, people who love your brand. That's great, you should keep doing that. So love it, just not quite what I mean by creator economy. Do that though. Influencers, the difference between influencer and creator, I think the way I think about it is influencers are renting their audience and creators are renting their skills. Influencers, I could have just been famous for whatever reason, and I just have a big following that might be vaguely relevant to Lord and Taylor, and I will sell you a spot. A creator is saying, let's create something together. Let's make a goofy video in my voice, or let's do an explainer with my subject matter expertise, or let me work with the brand. So it's kind of a subtle nuance there, how we think of influencers and creators. And that social interest graph, I think, matters on social platforms. Again, social graph, who you're friends with, that's who you follow. Interest graph, you follow stuff you like. I suspect this room is some LinkedIn users, and you'll even seen a real shape of how LinkedIn changed, that this was heavily only someone you knew. Frankly, the way you know that I'm old is I still don't want to accept any connection with someone I haven't met in person, but the algorithmic feed is coming now. You see that. Your feed is changing for the same reason. Now, this social platform is trying to engage and understand how they can bring creators. So March 2021, LinkedIn brings their own creator fund, their own creator program, trying to follow this. So Sprout Social, just earlier, I think this summer, had a good annual report, so I'm not going to dive too much because it's their work. But a couple things stood out to me from their large survey of marketers using creator marketing. One, if you look at these overlapping circles, it hurt my brain a little bit, but obviously it's one of these surveys you could say I prioritize multiple of these categories. But if you look at a few of them, the ones that are over 50%, it's mostly marketers who are saying, I know this is not going to convert directly for me. I'm working with creators to try to elevate or activate my own social channels. Hey, we're trying to get started. We want to work with creators to boost some followers, do broad brand. They're not necessarily doing it for direct conversion. You know, more demand gen than lead gen, you might say. You do see that 42% of marketers in this last survey did cite it as attempting to boost revenue. We'll see. One in four, though, still view it as staff aug. That'll come up a little bit later. I think that's something that you want to think about. If I'm looking at creators as essentially, oh, I don't have staff to make a goofy video, so I'm going to work with someone, or I don't have staff to do an explainer, and it's just basically I'm looking at an extension, that's one way to budget in your mind, as opposed to I view this as pure advertising. Oh, I could get a billboard, or I could work with a creator. That's a subtly different way to think about creators, and that's still being shaped out as we see it. The platform check, the point is this has grown a bunch, right? Like for those of you who have been at this a while, you know as marketers, the rule's always you go to where your community is or who you're trying to reach, right? That's the most obvious thing that has been true always and always will. But then you can think of creators as a kind of a tour guide authenticity boost, right? If I want to get onto these platforms and we see the platforms, surprise, publicly traded companies want you to give them money, if they make it increasingly difficult for you to build your own audience, how much you have to and want to work with existing creators with following might be a big reason why this becomes more part of your strategy. But quick platform check. Yes, Instagram and TikTok are very much kind of like the icons of the creator economy right now, but YouTube very close. They give out more than any other platform. So YouTube deeply matters for some market niches. The streams, Twitch, Kick, live streams are real. We've seen some very prominent, very focused audience marketing efforts there. LinkedIn added the creator fund as I added to that. LinkedIn's trying to add effort here. Facebook, a lot less excellent. They're still trying to do some of it. I would call out online communities. I've seen more partnered Slack channels. So for those of you who have either industry groups, that's something to think about as a way to kind of create content with someone. Mastodon, Blue Sky Threads, the whole open social web is a whole nerdy thing that's coming. That'll probably be your Philly Ad Club conference in like 2 years. So you can wait on that one, but that is going to be a thing. And still newsletters. Still newsletters are a thing. We'll see how much AI disintermediates email, but we still absolutely see brands who are co-creating with newsletter creators with heavily focused niche audiences all make sense. So this is like a lay of the land on the platform. Everyone will ask those quick questions of should I do this in-house? Yes, of course you should. Of course you should think about creation on social and other platforms as something you should be doing in your internal teams or on your, totally. But you might still also consider creative strategy, one, for the obvious reasons that you can work with creators who have different audiences, so this is just a different place to work. The classic third-party validation, you know, you can't be the only one saying you are cool, you need someone else talking, corroborating, and authenticating. We know that. And then just creativity and independence. You might just see this as, I don't know, guys, what do you think of our brand? How would you approach this? And just try to see this as a place that you can try stuff that maybe your boss would never let you do, but you can say, I don't know, the creator did it. And that's like an opportunity for you to shelve some of the work there. I also suddenly want to say, I think marketers should always think of also the ecosystem of storytellers you want. If you really care about any given, if your business depends on geologists, I think you should care about who are telling stories about geology. I don't know why that's the example that came to mind, but there you go. Point is, these are all strategies of why you care about who's creating content, which is a dirty word in journalism, but an effective word everywhere else. That's what we want to see. Okay, I am required by law to have a slide that says AI. I'm gonna do it briefly, because it absolutely relates here. But if you were like this man in the slide deck, just the point is, I think that AI is gonna make the creator economy more valuable, not less. That's the point. So you can now snooze for a second. But what else do I think AI teaches? I think you badly should be playing with it to create your own content. A lot of what you do will probably be bad, but you should be playing with agents or generating content or taking social clips or doing that stupid video someone shows you, like your intern shows you. Do you know you can make on Canva social images that say great quotes from Dwight Eisenhower that relate to our brand? You should do that, sure. It probably will be boring, but you should try that. So yes, you should be using AI and playing with how do you create stuff. It will probably suck. I do think that Gen AI is going to make existing followers more important. I still making this bet on a world that gets ever easier to generate ever faster content. The world always zags when everyone thinks it's going to zig. So I think when there's more and more and more, I think brand matters more. I think if you can stand out at all, if you have any relationship with an audience, I think that becomes more important, not less. A big mantra of the moment has been this freedom of speech, not freedom of reach. You'll be able to say whatever you want, but increasingly you just may never be heard. And that's the platform fight that we're having right now of freedom of speech versus freedom of reach. There's nuance in what that can mean. And here's a little that we're just starting to talk about over at Technically. We've been doing some reporting. I think a very big question that relates to creators and brands will also be, who is telling the LLMs what you want about, what do you want said about you? We probably think that brands will be, this is very much like the next generation of search. We do expect brands will not get as much credit for saying, I am great, if it's on your own website. So it probably matter a lot who else is talking about your brand. And when we look at the corpus that is going to feed next generation of LLMs, I think we're going to start talking about who is feeding what. And I think it'll matter the weights of who's speaking about your brand. So it's like this other reason why I think AI might mean creator economy matters more, not less, in the future. Okay, a couple of examples. This is a boring slide, but this is just if you're like, I just don't know still what this man is talking about. Here are like five kind of hypotheticals, and we'll get a couple of examples, and we'll roll through some specifics if you're still feeling like the man is weird. So you're a health insurer, and you want to make sure more small group employers actually know about your offerings or choose you over someone else. I don't know. You could work with an Instagram finance creator who has a relevant audience and say, I want to create an explainer about some arcane topic that we find our buyers have to select on, and you'll say that this was brought to you by my brand. So I'm reinforcing my brand, I'm creating some education, it's with someone with a different audience. If you represent a university that wants to market a brand new certificate program, you could find a YouTuber that does do relevant content, and you can say, we want to do a real deep dive on, you know, the third class that you would have in our certificate program. We want you to do a deep dive, and we'll sponsor it. So we'll pay you to create this deep dive into this work, but then that person will be saying, hey, if you want this kind of learning, you should go check out this university certificate program. Kind of way more blended, not just pre-roll ads, although you could also do pre-roll ads with it, but you could kind of also want to create that with a YouTuber. If you're a nonprofit who's looking at staring down Giving Tuesday, good Lord, how do I do anything different so my boss doesn't yell at me? You could take that testimonial video you already have from people you've served, and you could say to a creator, can you just do a reaction video? I just want your reaction to this beautiful testimonial. You put it in front of your followers, but I want to be able to reuse that asset in other places that I know are valuable, like Facebook. If I'm trying to sell to a certain demographic that has lots of Facebook, I'm gonna repost that video of that creator reacting to the work that my nonprofit does as an example. So you're a training program, you want to attract participants in some form, TikTok creator could do a goofy anti-corporate video. I'm using that example a little bit later of some things. Tease the traditional job, say this is made possible because of my training program, you can, you know, opt out and come over to this training program. Or just a large employer still doing the RTO thing, you can say, I want to do LinkedIn Live with someone who has influence in the demographic I want to either hire or retain. And let's both do a webinar that explains why this is not going to kill everyone and the hot dog cart needs your money. And we can then take social clips and repurpose them over the next few weeks, reinforcing why we think this is important for our business. So these are just like, put them in your head, take whatever persona is vaguely relevant to your work, and that can be like what creator economy means to you moving for the last bit of our time together. Okay, so also everyone's like, well, how much money? This is obviously, everyone will talk shit on me, for those of you who have done creator economy work here, because this ranges a ton. So please, good Lord, do not say, but Chris Wink said, it ranges a ton, changes by the platform, moves a lot, but here's just to give you kind of a sense. Most of the platforms see it by rough follower count. Spoiler, follower count is not always tracked to engagement, particularly in TikTok, but whatever. It's just like a consistent proxy that people use. And the platforms, Shopify did a big survey that I recommend. If you Google it, you will find it. But kind of a synopsis here, because it ranges by platforms. Bigger, 5 to 10K a post. Smaller, 500 to 300K. And I'm going to reference news orgs, because I'm a journalist. But I'm going to say a thing a little bit later, and I think news organizations are so dumb for not re-articulating what we do. So I want to come back to that as a little like, oh, the journalist had to say that. So I'll come back around to that. But the rough gauge is you're talking thousands of dollars. These are not necessarily big spends initially. Strategy is where it comes to. But one-offsies, you can do one-offsies. There are a bunch of risks that you'll take into any creator economy. Like anything that you do, it's always attribution, right? I think that Sprout Social survey matters a lot. The marketers who are doing a lot of this just come to recognize, you just are not going to see, we did that post and they all bought our Paisley dress. It just is not going to happen. So I just need to promise you it won't. But then you're going to have the same difficulty that you've had from billboards and magazine ads and everything behind, is how do I think about attribution? Coupon codes, like, you can try some stuff, but I would just strongly caution you this is going to be another one of these, you know, the John Wanamaker line of half my advertising is a waste of time, the problem is that I don't know which half, kind of thing. Not all creators are the shit together. These are often independent people. There's a reason they're independent. So that is both their creative spirit, but they will drive you nuts. It's why we've seen more creator agencies pop up. It's even why we at Techni are trying to figure out how we can work with creators in our lane of like economics and workforce stuff, because I find that is a lot of work. Many of you know that. Just trying to get the person to actually deliver the thing will actually be a challenge here. I think that you have this risk or challenge to think about how you internally categorize creator marketing. And you saw a little bit earlier on the Sprout Social stuff. You either see this as pure staff aug. Hey, we just, instead of hiring a blog writer, we now hire someone to make videos. That could be a way for you to think of them. You can think of them as kind of consultants. I want this person to help give feedback on how we should bring our brand to market. Or you view it as pure advertising. I just view it as like, I have this many dollars and I could either do another round of Facebook ads or I could try this. I think you'll be most frustrated if you go that route, but that is a path that some are taking. I kind of think you want to think of the creator video, the creators as one of the first two, and then they are added to your existing paid social strategy, paid search strategy, but that's my own opinion. Let's talk about postmodernism for just 8 seconds. So a thing in creator land is how all of the sponsored content is moving to this thing of we make fun of doing the sponsored content while doing the sponsored content, so it looks like I'm not selling out, but I am selling out, and did you see what I did there? And that is like every creator's default strategy, and brands have decided they're okay with that. So like the Honda Odyssey ad in Deadpool and Wolverine this year was this kind of iconic example of that. Honda paid $150 million for two celebrities to shit on their car for the next 10 minutes. And so this was like kind of the height of, see how in we are? We know that you'll make fun of us, but you also just saw these Ryan Reynolds driving in my car. Don't you want it? I think we need other paths, as I would challenge creators, as a creator conference, I would challenge us that needs to be like one of the tools we have, not the only tool. So I would just caution you that you will find that is often a good move. It's an easy move. I will make fun of the fact that I'm doing the thing even though I'm doing the thing. Mm-hmm. And just keep that in mind. It may still work, right? I think sometimes this works. There's a lot of anti-corporate creators that are, you know, doing ads for like Indeed. And it's like, I'm making fun of jobs, but also here's how you get a job. So it just might be the move, but keep that in mind. Obviously, how does it fit in Fuller strategy? Because this is somewhat new for folks. Sometimes it's like, I did the creator thing, it'll solve everything. Obviously, it will not. It's just a reminder that it's just one tool in your toolbox. And what's the vibes? This is just, I actually really like this creator. It's like kind of an anti-corporate creator. And he did a video for a coding boot camp that we also do a bunch with. And his commenters trolled him a bunch because he's very, like, you don't need to work the job, man. Here's a training program to get a job, man. And he got, like, trolled a little bit by his followers. And it's just it's a thing that you will have to think about as you work with creators of who's the right fit. Some of those aren't showing up. That's fine. So just a couple specific mechanics here. If you're like, all right, what do I actually do? You probably already have some creators you follow. A lot of them have a link in bio that will go to a site that often will have an email. Some of them have pricing, very few. Most are like, let me see how big I think your company is. So you can think about how you want to do that. I email a creator goes on LinkedIn and says, ooh, this is a 1,000-person company. I will charge them more. Oh, this is a 20-person. So you have to decide how you want to engage creator and the like. Most creators are evolving clearer processes. There are a whole lot of summits. There's a whole lot of information online that is now guiding creators to be slightly more professional, so we're seeing them add a little bit more. But you're gonna email said creator and say, I'm thinking about doing this campaign. Can I have your rate card, or can I talk about how you've done these videos? I might strongly recommend you find a video they've already done that you like and say, hey, I like your stuff. I represent XYZ brand. I really like this. I'd love to do something similar to that. What's the pricing model for that? And you'll typically get some feedback. Some will want to do a call. This will be old news for some of you and not. Always sensible to ask about analytics. Some will have more, some will have others. Mostly it's coming off the platform anyway, but you can still ask questions about what else they're doing around that. And then ultimately trust the creator, right? Like you're going with the creator, and so if they really want to do that postmodern troll your brand, all right, Jesus take the wheel, go with it. And I think you have to see what that looks like. But that's ultimately going to be a brand decision. Couple like technically things, we're doing more of this. So we set up last year our first creator in residence program. I am very keen on thinking that news orgs should see themselves not just as creators, but also curators of creators. I think all of us should take kind of like our brand and see we want to convene conversations around this world. So we have a creator in residence program we're doing right now with some creators. We're obviously a very specific, all news orgs are a very specific bent, right? Like we're going to be at our best when you care about the kind of facts. You know, context, interviews. I think a lot of premium YouTubers are also like this. There's a ton of overlap, I think, with great creators that are doing very journalism-y things, but would never say they're doing journalism-y. You're paying for kind of that brand value. A whole bunch of news orgs. This isn't me talking about having news orgs, but I think are terrible at talking about themselves. There's more effort to do underwriting. You could say, no one is talking about geology. I don't know why I'm obsessed with geology. No one's talking about geology. We just want to make sure there's more stories about geology in my region or whatever. So think about whatever your focus is, and you could consider, I just want these stories to exist. I want to control them all. And I think news orgs are doing better at now citing, when you work with news orgs, you also then support all of their other reporting. And so there's kind of a social enterprise. So it might be fit your brand. That's again your thought of, what do I want this goal to be? Just like any reason you would advertise anything else is, do I think this is a way for me to also get some brand value on supporting a social good? Cool. All right. Let's run to the punch, because then we want to leave a little time for cues. Again, really simplified. Do not holler at me for this very ugly, very kind of basic deck. I just wanted to give, like, what could I do here? I want to leave this session. I know I can do something. Here's the crawl, walk, run. You could just say, all right, I keep hearing about this thing. The man was saying something about a Paisley dress. I want to do something. So you could go to a creator you like, either locally, if you sell locally, or nationally. Email, get an inquiry, find out what it would cost, and do your first video. But then do not expect something dramatic to happen. You'll do that video primarily to be able to say you did one. You know, oh, I did one with a creator, I can show my boss I did something clever, I can do it at the all team thing, maybe some nice outcomes will help, maybe I'll get some more followers. It will not change your world. You're gonna put a few $1,000s, you're gonna do a thing. The walk, you could say, I wanna work with a few creators, or I wanna work with one creator on a series. And then you can start getting to, all right, I wanna compare and contrast the reach of the audience of different messaging, so you can learn some things there about why you would wanna say, hey, do we do better on this platform, or do we do better with this messaging, or do we do better with this approach? That's a chance to learn a little bit at the walk stage. And the run that eventually, like a Lord and Taylor, but even I've seen this coding boot camp I mentioned that those previous videos I was going to show them and I didn't. They're all about a coding boot camp. They did probably 30 or 40 creators, a few news orgs, and then they clearly then assessed what was the value across them all, knowing that some of it was hard to attribute, but for them it was ultimately about what kind of brand did we put front, and put, how do we put our brand in front of these audiences. So that's what you can set in motion. All right, lessons that I think I got a few minutes for questions. So that Paisley dress, what do we go, when we go back to March 2016, when the FTC slaps Lord and Taylor on the wrist and announces that they have set these new standards, there still is this native advertising explainer on the FTC's website, which is still technically their guidelines. So even if you don't want to read it, you can now just put that in ChatGPT and say, what do I need to know about this thing I don't want to read? But you should learn some of those basics. Three big things came out of that. We thought that transparency was going to kill it. It didn't. Turns out, if the creator is authentic with their audience, who cares? The point is, I can't do this work without my partner, this marketer, the advertising firm. So transparency, we should not be scared of, and instead say, this is how I do the work, and this company thinks that my work is valuable. So I want to say that they support me. Authenticity, obviously, the reason you work with creators, like, on TikTok, there's not a lot of high quality video. There's some, but a lot of it's not. It is not directionally relevant. Quality and audience, it's not, right? That might change over time, but right now it's way more the hook. It's the approach and the audience, the authenticity to whoever you're talking to. So that's what you want to focus on. Doesn't matter if it's a little grainy, it doesn't. That will be the reason it doesn't pop. And experimentation, that we all have to be sometimes careful with our own brands, so creators are a chance to experiment with something you want to try, but you don't think your boss is ever going to go for it. And attribution is difficult, so that's also why you want to keep trying things and learn a bit about what works. So that is what I think the 2015 Lord & Taylor Paisley Asymmetrical Dress can teach us about the creator economy, and I think we got a little bit of time for questions. Thanks for the opportunity. I appreciate it.
Brown jacket first. Great talk, thank you so much. I think that being having a unified message and a unified brand is super important. What do you think about that when choosing creators, whether deciding whether to use creator marketing or not, the risk being that you kind of dilute your brand, dilute your message?
I think that there are 27 million creators, and so I think it might be, I don't necessarily want the creator with the most followers, I want the creator that's most consistent with the brand as I see it. To be clear, my earlier slide, I don't necessarily think that every brand should or is going to use creators, but I think the point is, whether you don't is itself a choice. I think that, for me, is the point. Like, the decision should be, we don't think this creator thing is good for us, because we want to do a different thing in the world, and that itself is a message. But if you're like, well, I want to experiment, I think the point is there's a whole lot of them. And so there's no reason you couldn't go to a creator with 2,000 followers, but you think the voice is very consistent with yours, and say, I don't really care about the audience, because on stage one, it's not going to move anything for me. So I just like this creator, I want to do something with them, I want to give them a couple grand and try a thing. That is as much a possibility. You can think of it as stat log, right? If you just view, this is just a creator to do something with me, and oh, they will also put it on their feed. You see how that line starts blurring of, did I just hire a consultant or are they a creator? Well, of course, the line blurs a little bit. So I think you should be consistent with what your strategy is, and there's a lot of people to make it happen.
Thank you.
Yeah.
All right. Great talk. Thank you, Chris. I wanted to get your thoughts on risk and negativity. Risk in that I feel like all these social media networks one day could be MySpace and just go poof. In fact, one of them is, the U.S. government's threatened to shut it down. So that, and also negativity, dealing in the social media world, it's upsetting for some, it's bizarre, it's otherworldly, it's not human in many ways, so how do you approach those things?
Yeah. I'm fascinated by how some of the comment universes, particular creators, do feel otherworldly. We do see these like small communities few small communities following individual creators, and never the twain shall meet. So One, I think the great thing is a lot of this is really easy to see. So when you're looking at creators, you're going to look at what is the comment vibe like. It's one reason why, I mean, newsletters and online communities are still part of that creator mix, as I called out, because they can be a lot more brand safe, right? Like, you can still work with that Voicy newsletter or whatever and say, there are no comments. It is a closed walled garden, and that's good for us. So I think that is part of the decision making. Like, I'm gonna fail and not actually find it. But I think the reason that list matters is some of them are closed universes. And like LinkedIn, I like LinkedIn. LinkedIn gets made fun of because it's just so earnest. Like, that is the way you make fun of LinkedIn is because it's a bunch of people coming out of Glee Club and then posting that they got a promotion. So that is gonna look safer. And there's not gonna be as much criticism. So that's, again, where you choose.
And the risk, like, one day it goes poof, you put all this work into a certain site, and it goes Twitter to X, and it becomes different.
Well, I think those are two different questions, but they're great ones. The first one is, like, they take the billboards down, too. So I think at some point, you're like, yep, that was for a time. If nothing else, I can't put the billboard in my living room, but I can take that video and archive, and I can repurpose it on my own. Some of these, it a little bit depends on the licensing deal, and so creators handle that differently. You could even say to a creator, hey, actually, how do you do IP? Can I take and repurpose this in perpetuity? And so you could say, 5 years from now, I want to use it in a different platform, as, oh, you know, remember when we did this video. So one, you still get an asset, but in some forms, billboard went away too. The second category of, like, will a platform go toxic? Well, yeah. I mean, I think you have a bigger problem. I saw a case, Laura Logan, really respected 60 Minutes reporter. When she first left 60 Minutes, she did, I'm going to forget this name, but she did this interview series with a brand. And then, topics aside, she went nuts. And so then that brand had a thing of like, well, I don't like that anymore. That doesn't look good for me. So that, I think, is yup. There's a real challenge. I guess my comparison would be you also could do the employee testimonial, and that employee can go off reservation. And yup, that's a challenge too. So I think there's inherent risk in all these platforms. Maybe my central point is I actually don't think it's very different than what we've experienced before. It's just navigating totally differently.
In terms of, you know, whatever size business you have a finite amount of resources, budget. In terms of tracking ROI for the creator economy, it seems less easy to do than it would be when you're buying certain digital products. Do you think that will change, or are people going to continue to, like, well, we think it's working?
My bet is creators will keep feeling that dutiful pressure and try to deliver direct ROI. And we'll do, like, use this discount code, you know, podcast, right? Like, turns out Audible wants you to sign up. So that they've reinforced that. I don't have an Audible account. My point in saying I'm not convinced that creators are going to deliver direct conversion. I just don't believe it. I think this is way more akin to the lifestyle ads of I want my brand adjacent to this stuff. So it's true. I don't think in most cases, I'm sure there are examples, but in most cases, if I'm not doing kind of brand level marketing, I probably wouldn't do as much creator marketing, or at least try to, like, mess with it internally first a bunch. But I think at some point, if you're doing any kind of brand work, if we want to, you know, change a brand, shape a brand, update a brand, that is when creators, I think, are at their best. Like, oh wow, that brand is working with that creator. Interesting. I think that's way more the point than I will now download your service. Yeah.
Going back to the postmodernism you brought up, in terms of, I know you mentioned that as one of the tools of me, but if we were to look at that as, you know, a general trend or a meta that unlocks certain opportunities to collaborate, do you see the general landscape moving in a certain direction after that? So we've gotten to the point of irony. You're saying this like general feeling for these ads. Is there a post irony ironic world, or, like, you know, where do we go from here?
Yeah, and there actually is there's a piece I'm gonna forget that is like predicting there's like a will earnestness come back? Like, so I think the answer is we all know this, right? Every generation is in response to the generation before it. And so in some form, yes, of course. Like, actually, I think some of the data that's interesting in I mentioned that I did three interviews with three different market researchers doing creator economy data. What was interesting is a few things that they did all agree on. And across all their market analysts, millennials were showing up way more in Creatorland than Gen Z. So it's not this like, oh, young people like this thing. It was fucking millennial dweebs. We love it, apparently. So it is like something like twice as many share of creators are millennial than Gen Z. So it's not just the young people like it. Millennials are using their crying, laughing with crying emojis and their tight jeans, and we're posting our influencer shit. So that, I think, already we might see that rise and fall. That's why I think, just like, in some sense, this is a harken back to niche advertising. And then it's like, and this has been around for, you know, 80 years. So the trade publications, but in a new form. So I think the tone people take will be different. Yes. I think the formats are like as if we were in 1920, and I'm saying, did you know there are trade publications that you can get your message in front of? That is, in some sense, what we're doing. But creators build the audience a different way, and it's no different, and I think no less important than it was then. But yes, I believe we're at peak postmodernism, and it'll stop being valuable. I think one more, then we're done. Sorry. Right here.
Hi. Great talk. I was curious to know, what are some brands that you think are getting it really right? Right, in talking to their audiences through these various platforms.
So, what's interesting is the brands who I think of doing a lot of creator work, it's the creators who are almost like the ones presenting. Because all the like classic, I mean, I think all of you will know better than I will about what brands are doing interesting work. I think I'm the worst person to asking that question, so don't ask me. I'm sure there's many people who are better at that than I am. But I think I can answer on like the creator side. I think that's the more interesting point, because I see it through the lens more often of what I see all kinds of brands. Like Home Depot is showing up with a certain class of creators very differently than I think the public health cycle during COVID had like a very compelling and interesting micro narrative of creator work, because we had this whole moment of how do you find trusted messengers for very different communities to embrace and think about public health in a different way. I think looking at the case studies of what regions did navigating a very contentious moment with public health messaging is the most interesting place to go see how people played it. But what brands, I think you and probably your peers are far more knowledgeable than I am on that. So thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Chris.
So we are going to take about a 5-minute break and get everybody to their next session.